Good morning. One of the things we're going to be talking about today, the subject is starving sin. It seems like every year we get to the beginning of the year and most of us look at health, and we're going to talk about that and some of the things that we try to take out of our life. And as Christians and as men and women, young people in the church, trying to avoid sin is something that's a challenge, but it's something that is attainable. We just have to put up barriers to make sure that we can do those things. And sometimes we have to really work at it to get that to happen. And I like the song that Glennon had us singing just now, talking about as if Christians were, we have other songs we sang that talk about the army of the Lord and the Christian banner that we hold high and just like the military that we are. And as I mentioned, we'll be talking about a dam later on in the lesson, but most of the dams in the United States were built by civil engineers, and civil engineers were a branch of the military. And so our military is often the ones that safeguard places like that for us. Time's short, so let's go ahead and get started today. So why is it that whenever we try to do our best as Christians, it seems like the difficult things come. We seem to have the most temptation. I've talked about this in a few other lessons recently. We've discussed it ourselves, but I think we all wonder those things. Okay, I'm doing pretty good. I'm studying my Bible. Those bad habits that I have, I'm doing really good. It's been a couple of weeks. I haven't had to deal with those. They're not bothering me. And wow, everything in my life is clicking. The things I want to do, I'm having success. I'm doing great at work. I'm doing great at home. My study just keeps getting better and better. I feel close with God. And like I've talked about before, that seems like when something weird just happens, it's just like you're attacked and you don't understand why. And I want to focus on that today. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12 says, "Therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall." I've used this passage a number of times too. But what I want to do today, in the past what I've talked about this, is we get into these situations where we feel really strong and we just kind of push aside all other cares. Today I want to look at those other cares and how we can put a barrier up against them. Like I said, starving sin, the idea of starving, we'll get to a definition here in a little bit, but watching out, there's a lot more to this whole verse than we talk about. The taking heed lest we fall really means we need to be watching all around us. Not just watching out for, but taking guard where we stand. And I think I talked about this too. I do a lot of cutting wood in the fall and in the winter. We burn wood at our house. My in-laws burn wood at their house. My mom and dad burn wood at their house. And so sometimes I'll get out there and I'll be doing quite a bit. I've got a good chainsaw, a big chainsaw. But if I'm not careful, and I've talked about this before, I'll start cutting all that wood, and as that falls off there, it's under my feet. This passage kind of is what I always think about when I'm out there cutting wood. If I'm not careful, I could just keep walking and moving around each one of those branches, cutting them up, but I might step on a log. Well, what does a log that's that big, that's on hard ground, typically do if you step on it? Doesn't it kind of roll out from under you? When I first started, I was really good at doing that, and I think I amused my father-in-law quite often by going out there just trying to go so fast. I'm like, whoa, I'd go down. Well, when you've got something that cuts, and it cuts fast, and it's in your hand, and you're flying backwards, that's not a good thing. Sin is no different. Sin can slice us to pieces if we aren't watching where we stand, and it's so important for it. But I want us to think about that. A lack of sin in our life is a void for sin. So it's just like anything else. If you have a bunch of something that something else wants, it wants to get that no matter what. Mike talks about his cats. I think about him every time I go outside, and all of our cats are standing up outside looking in the window. We don't have house cats, but they wish they could be house cats. And they look outside that window, and they see me get up in the morning like, sweet, it's time to eat. Rachel and I walk out often, and I'm like, we need to starve you guys, so you'll go out and get these mice that keep showing up in the house like that. But every time I see him out there, I think about Mike. It's like, oh, that's just so funny. And boy, they love that food. But if they see that food sitting there by itself, they want it so badly. They figure out, how can I get it? How can I get it? How can I get it? That's how sin is in our lives. If we're doing good, Satan wants to overrun us. We become to him a prize target. So keep that in mind. And again, when we're doing good, Satan sees us as an empty canvas, much like a child sees a white wall in a house. I was trying to figure out if it was a good idea to even put this on here, because we've still got some young people. Thankfully, I think the ones that are old enough to read this have probably gotten beyond this, but some of the younger, newer ones might be going, hey, that's a good idea. So Braden hopefully is not paying attention right now. But how many times have you seen maybe grandparents, moms and dads, you got this big white wall and you got the crowns and the kids are working and they're like, oh, that's such a beautiful picture. I can't recognize it, but it's so cute. And then you go out of the room and you come back, you're like, whoa, I don't recognize that either, but that's not supposed to be there. And that kid's so happy, he's made beautiful things, or she's made beautiful sunsets on the wall. And it's like, oh. Well, that's kind of how Satan sees us. That canvas that can just be drawn on and marred and destroyed when we're doing good. While the New Testament teaches us that if we are full of good, it will be difficult for evil to make its way to us. But the nature of evil was to exploit what is good. 1 Peter 5:7-9, all these are taken from the New King James, casting all your care upon Him, for He cares for you. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. This keeps coming up in my lessons, but it's all of us struggle with trying to get away from temptation and things that might lead us astray. And so this is always on my mind. I would expect that it's on all of your minds as well. So if you've seen it on a lot of my lessons, please don't be upset about it. Actually kind of factor that in. Our adversary is the devil. He's opposing us. Just like I talked about, we're doing something good, that means he wants to destroy it. He is the destructor. We're doing something good. We want to destroy him. And so we both have this we want to destroy one another. It says, resist him steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world. So like I just said, I deal with things that are stressful to me, that kind of tempt me, that might lead me astray if I'm not careful. It says, these sufferings are experienced by my brotherhood. You guys are my brotherhood. I know that you deal with these same things too. The lion is looking for something good and filling to eat. You know, a lion doesn't go through the jungle going, ooh, chipmunk, that sounds delicious. A lion is a big animal. A chipmunk is nothing to him. What a lion wants is a big, fat, adult animal. Same thing a lot of other animals. Even when we go back to our pets, pets like something that looks delicious to them. They want to go after it. A lion's only going to go after something that looks inviting to him. When does something look inviting? As when we're talking spiritual things, that's when we're doing what is right. When we're doing what's good. We're full of the things that that lion wants to destroy and rip up. So keep that in mind when we're talking about these things. Good old definition time. In the New King James Version, the study tool that I use, and it may be in more if we look at some of the concordances, but the word sin is mentioned 1,150 times in the New King James. 815 in the Old, 335 in the New. It doesn't sound like the New's got a whole lot of information, but again, if you ever take your Bible and you hold the New Testament and look at the Old Testament, the New is pretty small, and so there's a good number of times that it's mentioned in the New. The word starving is mentioned just once, and this is mostly just for interest than anything, but in Proverbs 6:30, people do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy himself when he's starving. So God's not saying, it's okay to steal sometimes. What they're saying here is there's times when people get absolutely have nothing. And when they have nothing, God is certainly going to give them the permission to get something as long as they're doing it in the right way. But again, the word starving is all we're looking at there. The word starve itself, there's a number of definitions. There's some that we typically think of. But for this lesson, what I wanted to focus in on is this. To cause to suffer for lack of something needed or craved. Normally we say starving, and it's like, oh, it's doing a horrible thing. You're making somebody not eat, or you're not eating, or you're like, your kids come home all the time, and Rachel and I have to kind of work on our kids. It's like, oh, I'm starving. It's like, you are not starving. You look extremely healthy right now. Starving is when you're like shaking and you can barely get up, your body's shutting down. But for this definition, a lack of something needed or craved. So, we're going to talk about starving sin. When is starving sin a good thing? We need to stop something harmful like a gasoline fire. We've all seen this, probably. We've all experienced it. Some of us a little bit too close. Remember, I think it was last summer. I had a lesson right before that lesson. I think I'd been out on a Saturday burning a brush pile. And when I thought the fuel that I was using was a slow flammable gasoline, it wasn't. It was just chainsaw gas, and just the little chainsaw oil that you put in there does not change its combustibility. So I poured that on there and thought nothing about it. Got that flame close and went, and I about melted my face off. So be careful. I will suggest diesel fuel works nicely. So here's a nice picture of a gasoline fire. They're amazing. If you've ever seen a really big fire, especially at night, they will scare you. I think about Mark sometimes when he was overseas. So there's probably been times where he saw some fires that were set when he was in combat. But they just look so powerful. And I think I've mentioned this before too. One of the scariest things, we had a rash of all the times we've been on vacation. We usually do spring break together, and there's always something, it seems like, bad that happens around that time. And I had gotten up. My sugar was a little bit high one night. We were in North Georgia on the coast, and we stayed at this place that had this big lake out in front of our the place that we were staying. I got up at about 3 in the morning, and the sky was just black, but it kept shimmering. I'm like, what in the world happened? And then I looked up, and it was just balls of flames coming up over that lake. And what had happened is a car carrier had been driving. One of the cars came off the back of that truck. You may remember this story. I've told it before. That car came off, fell on the road, and a gas truck was right behind him. And he hit that gas truck, hit it head on, killed the driver of the gas truck. The truck exploded. It was horrible, horrible scene. And I've always felt bad about that. But just what you can see from afar, just it's a scary thing. Fire is not gasoline, but it certainly consumes it. You can have fire, but if it has no fuel, it doesn't exist. Gasoline, however, can remain in its pure form for thousands of years, maybe even longer than that. Now, we can't go put it in our containers and just sit it outside. We know evaporation happens, but it does still evaporate pretty slow. And you can have it in a can in your garage for a very, very long time. If you cap it off, you'll never lose that gasoline. But once that's in the open and you get any smoke or any fire, any spark around it, it just ignites. And as I've got on here, the slightest bit of fire touches it will not stop until the gasoline is used up. Afterwards, fire has no effect on an empty container until its soul is gone. So again, some of those mental thoughts for us to consider. That fire will burn and burn and burn until there's nothing left for it. So keep that in mind when we're talking about starving sin. We have to be able to fight it. You can put a gasoline fire out, but it is extremely difficult. And if you've ever been to some of the new Kroger's in the area, I know there's a new one in Lebanon, there's a new one up in Xenia. You ever go to Kroger's where their gas stations are and you see about 1,000 of those little weird sprinkler heads over top? That's what those are. Those are gas, those are made specifically for fuel fires to extinguish those flames. So sin and fire are close relatives. Matthew 25:41 says, "Then he will say to those on his left hand, 'Depart from me, you cursed, into everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels.'" These people were sinful people, so we're talking about starving sin, we're talking about fire, and we see that fire was prepared for the devil and his angels. Sin is not good, but like fire consumes gasoline, sin consumes good. That's what I started talking about in the beginning. Satan's not after something that doesn't look appetizing. When we are full of good, we're trying to do our best, and this can be a person maybe that is not a Christian, it can be a Christian. That's when he's going to go after us. Now, forgiveness certainly has a different impact on whether you're saved or not. But Satan wants to subdue all of us. He doesn't care who we are. But he especially dislikes Christians. Sin is something that we get used to doing. Maybe not in big ways, but in small, consistent ways. And just these things are for us to kind of think about. It's the words we use. The thoughts that we have. Maybe the actions that we take. Or the examples we set. We talked about that today in class. Abe said, well, there might be a person that wants to be an elder in the congregation. Boy, he looks up top. Looks like he's doing everything. But when he gets home, maybe he rants and raves and treats his neighbors badly. What example are people seeing in us? Are we the same people at home? Maybe it's the people that we talk to or hang out with. They're just not people that suit us being full of good things. They kind of take it away from us. Maybe it's a website that we look at or the books that we read. We love, I don't know what I wrote there. Love we show or don't show. Okay, just how we are towards one another, what kind of love that we have for one another. And all are missing the mark and therefore sin. We'll talk about missing the mark here in a second. Humans have to consume to live. We all know that. We have to have energy. We have to be healthy. And just like fire can live off gasoline, but like fire, too much fuel can cause us to be combustible or to combust. We've talked about this. The season that seems like we're all trying to focus on our eating habits and being healthy and New Year resolutions. Eating and snacking is something we in humans get used to doing, sometimes too often. Not all in only big ways, kind of going back to what we talked about, some of the things that tempt us, but it's in the small, consistent ways. A candy bar here, you'll see some things that are a little bit more personal for me. A pack of Sour Patch Kids, some Milk Duds, a Kathy bar, donuts, extra helping of a meal. Those Sour Patch Kids are the bomb. They're hard to get past me, and I'm addicted to them. But the extra helping a meal, I mean, it's the good, delicious things that we like. Why do we have problems with food and things like that? Well, it's because it's good. If it was bad, we wouldn't bother with it. Oh, that's a disgusting meal. Could I have more, please? I mean, that's just not natural. The same lion is going to go, man, I had that chipmunk yesterday. I was starving the rest of the day. I'm going to go back for another one. It's like, no, he's not going to do that. He might go try to go back for a whole pack of them or something like that, but it's only the things that appeal to us that we're going to go after. Too much and the extra is what causes us problems in our health, our weight, our mobility, happiness, and confidence. and sin. We're talking about starving sin again. Sin is like the snacks we crave. We don't want to. We want to starve that craving for our spiritual health. We're going to get into a couple things on here. Starving sin. So let's back up and we'll define sin. I've talked about this before. I love this picture. I would like to go to one of these archer competitions. Especially, I think this picture was one of the ones like they do for the people that are in the Olympics and stuff. Very, very impressive how they set that up. Hamartano, if I pronounce that correctly, I believe that is Greek. It means to miss the mark, to do wrong, or to sin. Hamartino is regularly used in ancient times, according to Strong's Concordance, as of an archer missing the target. My kids that I was teaching just a while back, Katie will remember this, was talking about missing the mark. And I think we were doing something with dropping pennies in a container or something like that. And every time they missed it, we were trying to instill in them about striving to not miss the mark, to try to hit where we were aiming for. So what's our mark as Christians when we're trying to do God's will? Philippians 3:13-15 says, "Brethren, I do not count myself to apprehended, but one thing I do, forgetting those which are behind and reaching forward to those things which are ahead." Our mark is the goal. Paul does a great job talking about goals over and over in his letters. He talks about his goal, his desire, what he's trying to obtain. "I press towards the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus." So there's a few places on there you can see some people that have actually hit the middle or almost the middle. They're aiming for something, and they're hitting it. They've been practicing. They're trying to get there. If your mark is that center bullseye, and you're an archer, and you've never gone out there before, the chances of you hitting that at all are pretty slim. Anybody that's ever shot a bow can tell you, and Katie, even though she uses both a bow and she's used a crossbow before, remember when she got her big deer, one of the big things that she talked about is how many times they had to go out there and keep trying to get that sight calibrated on that crossbow. She'd shoot and practice and miss. Shoot and practice, miss. I think she said something like 16 clicks or 60 clicks. I can't remember. Whatever it was, she had to keep tweaking that until she finally got it where it was hitting where it was supposed to. And then when that deer came out, she did get it because she had been trying to aim it. It requires effort on our parts to make sure that the marks that we're shooting for are going to be hit. And what I was going to say, any of you that's never shot a bow, if you ever go out there and you think, "But this will be easy," and you shoot it, I almost guarantee you, you will see that arrow go this way or that way or this way or in the ground. You may never get close to your target. You might too, but it's going to be difficult. So we know that what sin is and we know what our goals are. So how does this factor into starving sin like we're talking about? James chapter 1 says, "But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. There, when desire is conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it's full grown, brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren." All these things are in a linear fashion. We're tempted, we have desires, that temptation and that desire, if we don't hold them back, we don't dam them up, they're going to give birth to sin. And it's interesting, too, when you read this passage, the idea, this metaphor of pregnancy. It says, when temptation it owns desires and entices, then when desire has conceived or it's delivered, it gives birth to sin. So we need to keep those things in mind there. It's going to go straight through. Romans 6:12 says, "Therefore do not let sin reign in your mortal body." Why? "That you should obey it in its lusts." So, another thing interesting about this passage, we read it a lot there, and it doesn't say, "Do not let sin get close to you." Part of temptation is trying to get that sin on you, trying to get that temptation right on you, and trying to make you fall prey to it. Once we make an action, we see something, we let it into our mind, we do something, that's when it becomes sin. And going back to our fire analogy, to burn, a fire must be fed, and burns can kill. A sin, a desire must be fed, and desire or sin can kill too. So those two things, we're talking about fire and we're talking about sin. If they're going to be able to go on out of control, they're going to cause harm and kill. So how do we keep from feeding into our sinful nature? We have to starve sin. So is it really a problem? Yes. Supposed to be 1 Corinthians on there, I believe. 11:14, "And no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light." So, you know, going back to those things that appeal to us, Satan wants to go after us. We think about people that go hunting, and sometimes they go out and they bait things. How many times have you been by somebody's house? Or I think probably in the hunting world, I see this more often than anything. People take these big plastic turkeys and they go out and they stick them all over the place. And the other turkeys are out and they're like, whoa, that plastic turkey looks like somebody I could hang out with, and so I'll go check him out. Well, that hunter was baiting that. Or if you go out onto a pond, you don't see a lot of people going hunting for ducks anymore so much, but if people do duck hunt, they put a blind off to the side and they put all these plastic ducks out there, and then all the ducks are out there flying around like, whoa, check it out. There's a whole bunch of people down there. Let's go see what they're doing. It's exactly what Satan's doing. It says he transforms himself into an angel of light. He wants us to think he looks good too. And he didn't say he transforms himself into a sinful looking attractive person. He says he transforms himself into an angel of light. So you're thinking spiritual things. You're feeling really good about yourself. Satan's really after you because you're that void that he wants to subdue. And he goes, how am I going to get that Roger? How am I going to get that Viv? Or how am I going to get that Kyle or Abe or Linda? He goes, I got an idea. I'll look like somebody that they would expect to be doing good. And I'm going to make them go after me. A form of something is good that looks so good and yummy. So that's what Satan's doing. He's like, we go to our store. We don't have problems with snacks or food that is not appealing to us, just like I talked about before. What we have problems with are the things that appeal to us. If I go through the store and I go through a line, I'm like, oh, I'm doing really good. I'm not going to do anything bad today. I'm like, oh man, I'm in the grocery aisle and they got that. That's my favorite candy bar. What am I going to do? It's like, no, I could probably eat it before I get home. So that doesn't change anything. I could just consume it, but it's the fact that it looks good and yummy. You can't starve sin if you put yourself in a position of temptation. The buffet line. I put this on here mostly just to make a joke on here, but it's in the Bible. 2 Corinthians 12:7, unless I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. So Satan is that buffet that's laid out before us, right? Yeah, I'm not taking scripture correctly there, but just kind of, there is something there I think we should be thinking about there. Paul was talking about the thorn in the flesh there was basically keeping him in line before God. But it says a messenger of Satan to buffet me. That idea of buffet, it's basically just trying to push you out of the way of doing right. And that goes right along with the same things that we've been talking about here. Satan's always trying to get in our way to look appealing, to be distracting, so that we will fall prey to sin. And once we do that, he's got us. So New Year's resolutions, we talk about these things. Everybody looks forward to them. They get sick of them. Eating better, losing weight, exercise more. Why? We want better health. We want longer life. We want less pain. We want to have healthier appearance. We want fewer doctors. I think probably most of us like that fewer doctors things because that's the part that we have to pay money to deal with these things. We all have to deal with it. Every one of us. It doesn't matter who we are. We all have to deal with these kind of things because that's just part of life and age. How we treat our bodies and how we treat our souls are very similar. Both need constant attention. Both need focus, both need resistance, both need effort and goals. Matthew 10:28, do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. So it's kind of, things are starting to come back together, you see. And we'll talk about the temple of God here in just a moment, so I'll just hold off on that. So eating has been problematic from the beginning. I hadn't really thought about that until I was putting this lesson together. And it's like, you know, that is true. From the very beginning, where did sin come from? It didn't just come down because of a cloud. It didn't come down and man start sinning because of, just some action that they did. It started off from a tree. Genesis 2:16-17, the Lord God commanded man, of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for the day that you eat of it you shall surely die. So, if you say that last passage or that last screen I had up there, the body and soul are both to be treated equally before God. How could you not say that after you read a passage like that? Sin is what came into the world, and certainly God did not make the fruit magic that because they ate it, they became, had these special powers. We certainly see that they did become endowed with the ability to see right and wrong after that. But it was the rule that God set. They broke the rule. And in this case, the rule was not to eat of the fruit, but they did. Both of them did. And so that punishment was incurred. Food and spiritual things are often at odds with one another, and fasting helps bring us closer to God. Fasting, used 28 times. Fasted, used 15 times in New King James Version of the Bible. Again, at least in the information that I was using. 1 Corinthians 6:13, foods for the stomach and the stomach for foods, but God will destroy both it and them. Talking about the food and the stomach and the people that have stomachs. Now the body is not for sexual immorality, but for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. So not focusing on the sexual immorality there, but just the idea of what our body is to be used for good. Going back to this temple thing that we're kind of building up for. So fasting from food starves the body. Fasting from temptation starves sin. And that's what our focus is today. We're focusing on starving sin. We're focusing on the spiritual things. But we're using the analogy of our body's desire for food and the results of letting that get out of control. In both cases, get away from the temptation. So hunger, our stomachs, and expectations. I'm trying to find some pictures, and there's a lot of weird pictures for this, but our body, I was trying to find something that really conveyed this idea. Any of you that have ever had to fill up a balloon, and probably there's a lot of moms and dads for birthday parties for kids that you've had to fill them up and blow the balloons up for the kids. You can get these little tiny skinny balloons, and you can try to blow those things up, and they will absolutely either break your lungs or give you a headache or something like that. But if you stretch them out and try to blow them up, they fill up much easier. And that's kind of how our bodies are. Our stomach is like that. The more we consume, the more stretched out our stomachs get. And so when they get empty, they're very, very frustrated with us. And they let us know in very loud ways sometimes. So this idea of food and starving sin, we need to be thinking about that. Pets are like that too. I could have gotten a lot of pictures of pets. People just, their pets, I mean, animals aren't stupid. They want to just keep eating just like we do. It's getting carried away with it becomes problematic. And you see some get out of control. So how do we overcome these things? Prayer is certainly important. Persistence is very important. So steps to consume less. Starving. And again, keeping these two things in mind. I want to focus on the starving sin, but I want us to think about our bodies and our food and the things that we want to kind of keep those in mind. Reduce snacking little by little. Starving is taking away something. It's pulling it out of there. And we know that that works. It can be problematic. I mean, like everybody else, I have New Year's resolutions. Like, I'm tired of eating bad. We just went through Thanksgiving, we went through Christmas, we went through the Halloween candy that was out for everybody. I mean, we've got all these things that we've been eating for the last 3 months, and I was like, ugh, I got to stop. It's not working out for me. I signed up for a half marathon again this year in September, mostly just to say I need to get fit and get in better shape. Well, for me, what's been happening is I do great on breakfast, I do great on lunch, and when I get home, or if I stop at the store, I am so hungry, I just like, I just eat extra portions because I want to fill it. We can't get to that point, so we have to be smart about those things. We need to set times for eating and determine portions in advance and stick to it. And again, keep in mind, the focus is starving sin. We need to work on willpower to walk past the quote-unquote candy, the donuts, the sweets and chocolates. It's easy to eat, but hard to lose. Again, these things are metaphors for what sin is. We don't want to see the temptation of candy. We don't want to see the temptation for other things that we face. It's hard to get into those things, and once we start, it's difficult to stop. And biggest thing there, and we hear this from everybody, is the note successes. Hey, my weight's coming down, my clothes are fitting better, I have less pain, walking's a little bit easier for me, I don't have to worry about that so much. And use those wins to accomplish more. Same thing is certainly true in sin, too. Spiritually speaking, same thing for our weight, and our clothing, and the things that we have, too, are going to be easier to accomplish more if we do that. And the battles certainly are for us to win. So be prepared for the sin that we can starve it to death. Going back to that fire picture that we had up earlier. Put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provisions for the flesh to fill its lusts. So we just need to keep that off to the side and try to stay away from it. We must reduce the fuel that feeds the fire of sin. That is absolutely integral. If we don't have a fuel that's going to cause that fire to burst forth, it can't start. If you keep that lid on that gasoline, you could put fire all around that can and it's not going to catch on fire. But if you open that vent lid or you take the cap off of that spout, it can burn up immediately and can certainly cause you harm. So no fuel, no fire, both in physical and spiritual application. Got a book from Linda I really appreciated in the reading that. Josephus tells us about how Jerusalem was subdued in the time after the Bible covers the early church. And what they did is they cut off all the supplies of food and water to the city. We've certainly seen this throughout history. Whenever a conquering nation was going after somebody, they would go up and they'd try to shut off all their food sources, all their water sources, and basically try to starve them. And in this case, Josephus tells us that when the Romans were trying to destroy the Jews and to to kill them off. They would basically surround the temple area. They wouldn't let the water in, and they would just starve them, and they were doing a good job of it. They wanted them to leave, die, or to be too weak to fight. There's a picture of the Hoover Dam. The Hoover Dam, we'll see in just a moment, is the reason that we have Lake Mead out on the division of, I believe, Nevada and Utah there. And so this idea of starving sin is putting a block in that is going to hold things back so that we can be a little bit better Christians. So you can see the picture there, and I think most of you know that. So we must adopt the same approach to sin that we were talking about, what Josephus tells us about the Romans doing to the Jews to kill off them. We need to take the same approach against sin. Here's an overhead picture. Way down here, if I can see it right where that little arrow I've got drawn there goes, that's where that previous picture is. That dam right there is holding back all that. And let's see, I've got an arrow on there, I didn't mark it out. I've got a line down here. There's about 50 miles from where the Colorado River starts filling up Lake Mead there on the right-hand side of the screen, that's east, to the left portion of Lake Mead, 50 miles. And you can tell it's probably close to that, maybe 40 miles, 35 miles, going from the southern part of Lake Mead to the north. That is a lot of water. And if you see some of this other geology on there, just where these rivers and stuff, I mean, the Colorado is a huge river. I don't know if you can see it. Let's see, where am I at? Up here. Yeah, just down this little tiny thing that you can't even make out right there. That's the Colorado River. And you know, it's much bigger than the Ohio River is. All that has been held back by that one dam. So I want us to think about a number of things there. When we're trying to be able to starve sin, we want to cut off its supply route. If we can't get all those temptations going into us, to make us, to lead us astray, to cause us harm, then we're going to function more normally. Now, the interesting thing is the water that comes out of the dam, right down there below that area, that water is pretty consistent. There's a number of things that dam's supposed to do. Unfortunately, most of it's to take water to places that don't have water just so they can have their little societies in the middle of the desert. But what it also does is to try to keep the water more consistent coming out of there. So, going back to what I talked about earlier, when we're trying to starve sin, we're trying to hold things back to keep us in better shape. I mentioned this. You ever go to the store when you're hungry? I put on here, Mom and I were just talking about this the other night. So what do we usually do when we're doing that? We've got to go to the store, we've got to come home with some groceries, and you're like, man, I am starving. Don't you have a problem with everything that sounds good ended up in your cart? I think Mom said Dad had some ice cream and some pie. Sometimes we come back with cakes. Rachel does a pretty good job, but sometimes she'll come back with packs of stuff. I'm like, why did you get that? It's like, I do great if it's not in my house, but when it's in my house, that's when I fall prey to it. It's like, that Entenmann's donut lid is so easy to open. It's amazing. Well, it really is, especially if it's the devil's food variety. I can do a good job if it's not there. And we laugh about that, but that absolutely is what I'm trying to get to when we're talking about starving sin. If we don't bring that stuff into our house, it's not a problem. If it's at hand, that's when we have the most problems with food. It's exactly the same thing when it's spiritual. If we keep letting things around us that are very, very close in proximity that can lead us astray, it's going to be easy to mess up. But if they're not there, it's going to be good for us. So, no donuts, cakes, cupcakes, snacks, cookies, ice cream, junk food. Why? Jesus was fasting when he was tempted and turned stones into bread. Satan was trying to trick him into food, and he was hungry. I like this picture, and I thought Abe and Linda would probably like this too. This is a baker on a Navy ship. I think it was an aircraft carrier. I can't remember which one it is. I didn't get all of it on there, but you know, the analogy of stones to bread makes a whole lot more sense when you see a picture like this. Doesn't that look like a whole bunch of rocks all piled up together there? Now, I don't know about you, but for me, I think those are all overdone. I like bread when it's really, really soft. It makes my mouth water, and then it's got butter on it. That would be really tough for me to deal with. When they make it a little crusty like that, I'm like, I think I got a little bit more resistance today. But Matthew 4, 2-4 says, and when he had fasted, talking about Jesus, 40 days and 40 nights, that's over a month of our time, afterwards he was hungry. So, if you're hungry, it's been over a month since you've eaten, and you start thinking about that. Man, that bread looks good. That really sounds like something I need right now. Now when the tempter, talking about Satan, came to him, he said, if you are the Son of God, command that these stones become bread. But Jesus said, It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. Take that back to what I talked about earlier. Our bodies and our spiritual health are very, very similar in God's sight. If we're going to live and be successful and make it eternally to heaven, we can't be dealing with these things that are secular. Even our physical bodies, they're absolutely integral for our life, but they do not affect our soul. If our soul is more, and hopefully it is, our soul should be more important than our physical body, even to the point of death. And that's what Christ is saying right here. I am not going to die because my focus is spiritual things. My focus is God. I am not going to be tempted by what you just said. Spiritual food makes our temple more perfect, so we must be ready to starve sin. 1 Corinthians 3:16 and 17, do you not know that you are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? If anyone defiles the temple of God, God will destroy him. For the temple of God is holy, which temple you are. Now, we've kind of smiled about some of the food things. We've kind of thought about the spiritual things. We need to think about both of them in this passage, because it doesn't say that your spiritual body is all that God's looking at. He's looking at it, our entire self. So we need to try to resist all things. Luke 16:13, no servant can serve two masters, for you'll either hate the one and love the other, or he'll be loyal to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Now, mammon does not mean food here. It does not mean those temptations. It's basically just the love of money here, but the idea is certainly applicable. If we want to have healthy physical bodies, we need to be willing to starve or cut off our tendencies to eat too much or too often. Our mind might say, yeah, grab those dumbbells and work on them. But our mind might see those donuts and say, man, that is so much easier. And if I asked everybody to raise their hand and say, which one of those is more gratifying, I almost guarantee you every single one of us would say the donuts would. Well, not Rochelle. She's shaking her head no. She would be more gratified to eat the dumbbells than she would be gratified to eat the donuts. So I love working out. I mean, you see the benefits for it. It is not easy. And it takes a long time. If I let myself go, and some people think, haha, yeah, yeah, whatever, you're tall, you're thin, it doesn't matter. I mean, we all have difficulties that we have to face. I always think about, to me, the perfect person is that Special K. Can you pinch an inch thing? You guys remember those commercials? You can't pinch an inch? Well, to me, that's always like, if I can do less than that, I'll be perfectly healthy. Like, well, whatever. These two things are difficult to do. All working out is just that. It's work. It takes effort. It's not fun. Even though Rochelle likes it, it's not fun. I love running, but it is work. It wears you out. But I will say I do kind of enjoy that. If we want to have healthy spiritual bodies, we have to be willing to starve or cut off our tendencies to get close to sin too often, too much. Again, keep these two things in mind. That's what I'm trying to instill in all of us. So what gets us close to sin? There's a big passage for you. Mark 9 says, if your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. It didn't say if your hand causes you to sin, stop using it, let it fall asleep, or watch TV for a while if it's in a weird place. It says, cut it off. And we've been talking about this the last couple weeks. It is better for you to enter life maimed rather than having two hands and go to hell, into the fire that shall never be quenched. We talked about fire, and we said, well, if a gas fire, it's going to run out when it runs out of fuel. This passage tells us that God's fire, for those that are disobedient, will never stop burning. Where the worm does not die and the fire is not quenched. It talks about our feet and says, if it causes you to sin, cut it off. It talks about the eye down below. If your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. So when we go back to things like this, what's our temptation? We need to be willing to pull out all the stops and say, I don't care what this takes. I have to stop it. I have to put forth effort on these things. So what's the big deal with all this? Satan is pulling out all the stops as well. Psalm 69:2 says, I sink in deep mire where there is no standing. I have come into deep waters where the floods overflow me. There's a lot of things about a dam, and we'll talk about this too in just a moment here. But if Satan, remember the picture, I don't know if I've got it ahead of here or not, but remember how big Lake Mead is, all because of that one small dam right there. And it's a big dam, but the lake is so much bigger. Satan would be very happy to pluck that dam out of there and let all that sin and temptation go flooding down and destroy all those places down below there. One of the things I want us to remember is that we are the ones that hold that dam in place. That dam can be torn down by us, that dam can be opened up too much by us, and all that temptation can just come flowing out of there. And sometimes we may be able to stand firm in that flood, but the people that are with us, the people that are around us, may get overwhelmed and pushed over. So do not be consumed by sin, but we need to starve it. 1 Corinthians 10:12, therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. I love that passage. Genesis 4:7, if you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. Rule over it right there. Sin lying at the door. Those two things right above each other. And that picture down below is exactly what we got. We got all this sin. We've got us, with God's help, trying to keep that at bay so that we can not get overwhelmed. 1 Corinthians 10:13, no temptation is overtaking you except such as common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. But with the temptation will also make a way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. Think about that. I hadn't thought too much about this, and I was thinking about it last week. I thought even more about it yesterday. That way of escape is like a door. It doesn't say that God's got as a side passage that we can go running out to there. This idea of this escape route is sometimes something that we have to open, that we have to go through manually. And we can't leave it open. If we leave the sin, the barrier that God's put up for us, it's going to keep leaking and it's going to overwhelm us there. We have to find that way of escape. And the other thing we can do is we can leave it open. We may go on the way of escape. It's just like any other passage. You see a lot of people that are in mines and stuff. The water starts coming up, and if they don't shut one door to get out the other one, they're still going to get flooded. And that can happen to us too. So again, that picture over Lake Mead right there in closing. There are many temptations around us, both physical and spiritual, and both require resistance. That sin will not be held back if we don't keep that dam intact. Satan wants us to give in to temptation so that he may be satisfied and we will die. Keep thinking about that. Satan will be satisfied. We talk about how food satisfies us. Oh, that was delicious. I mean, we all like to have meals and things like that. Satan's satisfied when he's consumed us. When we are no longer faithful servants of God, when we're not a Christian, he's just taken us in. He's like, man, that was a good meal. Now what am I going to do tomorrow? We die. Starving ourselves of what we need is not acceptable. Starving ourselves of what we don't need is beneficial. And I should take that word out and say it's crucial. We have to. If we want to be healthy people, Christians, if we want to be healthy spiritual, if we want to be healthy physical, we absolutely need to make sure we starve ourselves of the things we don't need. We can get used to doing things that are contrary to good health, or we'll be flooded by sin. It will just come pouring out. And we control the dam. God provides the controls. We must use them to our advantage. So this morning, lots of things to think about. Again, please don't be frustrated about the whole idea of food and trying to minimize it. We hear that every year. All of us have to deal with it. I have to deal with it. You have to deal with it. Some of us do better than others. But it's a problem. I mean, that's one thing we can all agree on, is it's a problem. Sin is more of a problem. Our bodies, regardless of our condition, our hope for eternity does not change because of that. But our hope for eternity changes because of how much we've let sin into our lives and how much temptation we put around us. It's like a float tube. You have a lifeboat maybe, or you have a rescue buoy or something like that. And if it's in bad shape, you're probably going to drown anyway. You need to make sure that that's as good as it can be. So think about that. I hope these words have encouraged you. Let's be kind of, every time we're going around and we're seeing that food that tries to get into us, be thinking about spiritual things too and try to deal with both of them. If you have any needs at this time, please come forward as we stand and sing.